It's nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have overcast skies, no rain yet. Out at the airport, they have 71% humidity, east winds to 15, and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for rain, though, still, after 1 p.m. High near 48, east winds to 15, gusting to 25. Rain tonight, too, and that rain could be heavy at times. Low around 42 overnight tonight, east winds 25, gusting to 35. Coming up on the Midday Report, the results are becoming more clear for this month's municipal elections. Two boats burned and sank in Ketchikan's Bar Harbor. And hundreds of hotel rooms and emergency shelter beds will continue to be available to homeless people in Anchorage, at least through the end of the year. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol last year wants to question former President Donald Trump. Lawmakers unanimously voted to subpoena him. Members are defending that decision today. Democratic Representative Zoe Lofgren of California tells NPR's Here and Now about the message Trump sends if he does not comply with the subpoena.
If he comes in and can be publicly accountable for his actions, that would be, I think, a good thing. If he refuses to do that, I think that tells people something else about the former president. He's hiding.
In his response to the panel, Trump maintains his campaign was the victim of election fraud in the 2020 presidential election. But courts and election officials, including Republicans in Georgia and other states, concluded there was no evidence to support the one-term president's claims. And even members of Trump's inner circle acknowledged the Biden-Harris ticket was the legitimate winner. Russian President Vladimir Putin says this week's wave of deadly rocket attacks on Ukraine is coming to an end. He says Russia's military had already hit the majority of its intended targets, so no need, in his words, for further massive airstrikes on Ukraine. From Moscow, NPR's Charles Maines has more.
Speaking to Russian journalists at a regional summit in neighboring Kazakhstan, Putin also insisted an effort to mobilize some 300,000 reservists to fight in Ukraine was nearing completion, and that he presently saw no need for expanding the mobilization drive. Putin defended sending new troops into battle, saying they're needed to secure overstretched Russian lines against a Ukrainian counteroffensive. This week, pro-Kremlin nationalists re-upped criticism of the defense ministry's handling of the mobilization effort after several newly mobilized soldiers were killed in action soon after their arrival in Ukraine. Charles Maines, NPR News, Moscow.
On the Mediterranean island nation of Malta, two brothers have been sentenced to 40 years in jail for setting off a car bomb that killed the country's most prominent journalist in 2017. NPR's Joanna Kakissis reports from Athens. The brothers were supposed to face the first day of their trial today, but unexpectedly reversed their pleas.
George and Alfred DiGiorgio had entered not guilty pleas earlier in the day, but when the trial began, they unexpectedly pleaded guilty. The judge sentenced them to 40 years in prison. The two brothers were charged with detonating a car bomb on October 16, 2017, that killed Daphne Caruana Galizia. She was an investigative reporter who exposed extensive corruption in Malta. Her sons have been on a quest for justice since her murder. They have accused high-ranking members of Malta's ruling Labour Party of involvement in the assassination plot. Joanna Kakissis, NPR News, Athens.
This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The results from this month's municipal elections are starting to come into focus, and both of Kodiak's incumbent city council members have hung on to their seats for another term. Council members John Whidden and Charlie Davidson will both serve another 3-year term on the Kodiak City Council. The race was too close to call between Davidson and candidate Bruce Schachtler in the initial vote count released the day after the election on October 4th. The Kodiak City Clerk completed its canvass on Wednesday, which put Davidson ahead by 25 votes. John Whidden received the most votes of all three candidates. The clerk's office certified the result yesterday and presented the final tally to the Kodiak City Council at its regular meeting last night. Whidden and Davidson were both sworn in last night. The Kodiak Island Borough completed its canvass yesterday and will certify those results next week. The unofficial results were too close to call for 2 of the seats on the Borough Assembly, with hundreds of votes from the villages left to count. 2 boats sank after they were consumed by fire at Ketchikan's Bar Harbor early Thursday morning. 2 firefighters sustained minor injuries battling the blaze. In a statement, Fire Marshal Gretchen O'Sullivan says the incident was first reported just after 2:30 a.m. Firefighters arrived to find 2 boats engulfed in flames. The cause of the fire is officially undetermined, but O'Sullivan says investigators believe it might be related to an alcohol stove aboard the sailboat where the fire started. Harbormaster Dan Berg says the owner of the 30-foot boat had just left when the fire broke out. Not long afterwards, the whole boat was in flames.
Fiberglass burns really hot, and it burned through a couple of his tie-up lines, allowing the sailboat to drift over next to the boat he shares a spot with, which was a 28-foot Kingfisher aluminum boat, and that one burnt completely as well.
The flames scorched the sail and canvas work of another sailboat, which sustained only minor damage. Crews placed containment booms around the sunken vessels to prevent leaking fuel from polluting the harbor. Berg says the owners plan to raise and remove the boats in the coming days. He thanked the Ketchikan Fire Department for its quick and effective response. He says it's a good idea for boat owners to keep an eye on their vessels as fall turns into winter.
This is the time of year where things like this happen, where people have heaters and heat lamps going in their boat, so they should make sure to check all their all of that kind of stuff, and also check their batteries and bilge pumps.
2 firefighters suffered smoke inhalation. 1 was treated and released at Peace Health Ketchikan Medical Center's emergency room. The other declined treatment. Hundreds of hotel rooms and emergency shelter beds in Anchorage will continue to be available to people without homes through at least the end of the year. That's after the Anchorage Assembly on Tuesday committed $3.5 million more for ongoing shelter, meal, and navigation services through December 31st. The Assembly also decided that the city-owned former Golden Lion Hotel in the Tudor area will not be part of the emergency response this winter. Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports.
The Anchorage Assembly struck the Golden Lion from its emergency cold weather sheltering plan adopted last month. However, most Assembly members do want to use the Golden Lion's 85 rooms in the city's non-emergency homelessness response. Here's Assembly Member Meg Zalatel.
I do not want to see the Golden Lion used as a shelter. I've never proposed that it be used as a shelter. But it does make sense as housing. Housing is the solution to homelessness.
Zalatel argued that it's cheaper and more stable to essentially pay the rent for someone in a city-owned asset than to pay for a bed in a less stable emergency shelter setting. She said the savings could pay for services that prevent homelessness. In an interview, Assemblymember Jamie Allard said the distinction between using it as an emergency shelter and housing for the homeless isn't meaningful to her, since it would be serving the same population. Allard was the only Assemblymember to vote against the Golden Lion change, but the distinction may resolve legal issues related to city land use codes and a past Assembly commitment not to use the Golden Lion as an emergency shelter. There was a lot of political finger-pointing during public testimony and Assembly discussion on Tuesday about who did what that led to the repeated displacement and relocation of the city's homeless residents this year. The mayor's chief of staff, Adam Trombley, told the assembly he isn't interested in that.
I'll be honest with you, I really don't feel like getting in the middle of a political fight. I have no desire to relitigate the past. It doesn't change anything. My goal is to get along and find solutions.
Trombley said one of the next steps for the Golden Lion to become housing is for the assembly and administration to agree on a legal land use designation. The city's homelessness response beyond 2022 is expected to be handled through the assembly and administration's annual budgeting process, which is underway now. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Canneries are a big part of Alaska's history. Throughout the 20th century, waves of immigrants, primarily from the Philippines, came to work alongside Alaskan native people in the canneries. The Mug Up exhibit at the Alaska State Museum in Juneau has been highlighting this history for the last 6 months. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry walked through with curator and a former cannery worker and historian during Filipino-American History Month.
Okay, so these Mug Up breaks.
Yes.
The exhibit features lots of historic films and photos. There are black and white posed photos from the turn of the 20th century and more candid photos taken by friends from the 1960s, 70s, and 80s. Some panels explore the histories of the different labor movements that swept through Alaska's canneries. There's even a recreation of a bunkhouse with a door covered in the names of the workers who slept there from the 1980s until 2009. And next to it is a mess hall with a hand-painted table and a handwritten weekend menu. Jackie Manning is the exhibit's curator. Her favorite thing is a little cart used to serve coffee to workers during what was called Mug Up Time. And that's where the exhibit gets its name.
When I went up to Bristol Bay and I saw that little Cushman cart is what it's called, and heard the stories about how diverse the cannery crew was and how important that Mug Up Time was for camaraderie and everybody meeting and taking their breaks and just all the different languages you'd hear on the docks.
Oscar Peñaranda moved from the Philippines to Canada and eventually to California before coming to Alaska to work in a Bristol Bay cannery in the 1960s.
People sometimes, to start anew, they come here. No? And other people also are running away from things. Some are have a specific destination to come. So there are many, many different reasons. But they always came back.
And he kept coming back. He worked 15 summer seasons in Alaska before deciding to stay in San Francisco full time. He's a historian now. He founded the San Francisco chapter of the Filipino American National Historical Society and wrote about his experiences as an Alaskero. That's the term for Filipinos who worked in Alaska's canneries. For Filipino American History Month, he was in Juneau last week for the closing of the exhibit. He recognized some names and faces in the exhibit, like the Filipino union leaders who formed the Alaska Cannery Workers Association. They were murdered in 1981, and he said that's when he stopped going to work in Alaska.
You don't get hired if you don't know anybody. You know, that's the two who were assassinated, that's what they were trying to clean up.
Peñaranda worked at the cannery for 14 years, and he said he kept going back for the camaraderie. He made lifelong friends.
We didn't feel like we had to get in touch between seasons because we were going to go the next season and catch up. Mm-hmm. That's part of the reason why we kept going.
The labor movements happening in the canneries paralleled his life in San Francisco in the winters. In 1968, he participated in strikes at San Francisco State that led to the forming of the school's College of Ethnic Studies. Peñaranda went on to teach literature and Filipino languages in high schools and colleges in California. He's now 78 years old, and he's thinking of returning to Bristol Bay next summer to work with an old friend. It will be the first time he will have worked at a cannery since he stopped over 40 years ago. And another reason that Peñaranda said he kept going back to cannery work was the chance to be a new version of himself.
You can reinvent yourself when you work in the canneries. When you go to Alaska, you can reinvent yourself. You'll be a completely different. You don't like the way you are in San Francisco? Come to Alaska. Make your own reputation.
So, a different Oscar Peñaranda may return next summer. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
Energy utilities have been meeting since May to talk strategy as Cook Inlet's top producer of natural gas warns future contracts are not a guarantee. This week, A local sustainability group says the Kenai Peninsula borough could also play a role in helping avoid an energy crisis down the road. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Brettwood Higman is a member of the borough's two-year-old Resilience and Security Advisory Commission, which meets monthly to brainstorm how to make the borough more sustainable. He says Hilcorp made clear it's not short on gas right now. The company's actively pursuing several drilling projects on the east and west sides of Cook Inlet. But he does say the company said it's urgent that users diversify where they get their energy to make sure it stays that way.
Currently where we are, we're not in a crisis, but there's one not very far in the future.
Hilcorp Natural Gas is the largest component of local energy supply. NSTAR, for example, supplies gas to most of the Cook Inlet region. It gets about 85% of its supply from Hilcorp. Lindsay Hobson is a spokesperson for NSTAR. She says representatives from the company and other utilities have met several times since May to talk through their options together.
The utility group is looking at a number of avenues to pursue, and certainly one of those that we've all identified is the need for additional storage going into the future.
That was the approach Alaska took in 2010 when it faced severe natural gas shortages then. In response, the state sent tax credits to oil and gas companies and built the Cook Inlet Natural Gas Storage Facility in Kenai.
Storage has allowed NSTAR to buy greater volumes of gas in the summer months when demand is a little bit lower. And so the pricing is a little bit more favorable, but it also allows us to store the volumes that we need to be able to serve customers through the winter.
Proponents of the long-sought Alaska LNG project say that project could be another answer. Oil company Marathon also has the means to import at least a small amount of natural gas from producers overseas through its terminal in Nikiski. It's not just NSTAR that relies heavily on Cook Inlet natural gas. Homer Electric Association uses it to meet 86% of its energy needs. Its contract with Hilcorp is up in 2024. And spokesperson Carrie Ann Baker says HEA is working to diversify its energy portfolio so it's not mostly dependent on one producer. The utility's made inroads for long-term hydro and tidal energy projects and is looking into turning gas from Central Peninsula Landfill into energy for the load, too. Utilities like HEA say they're not worried about running out of natural gas supply yet, but Higman says it is crucial that stakeholders like the borough start addressing the issue today by conserving natural gas in borough facilities and encouraging private landowners to do the same, for example.
While it's really nice to just assume that someone, maybe there's, you know, the state will jump in and they'll do a really great job of leading the charge here and solving this problem, I think we've all had experiences where, you know, when we assume someone else is going to solve the problem, it doesn't work out so well. And I do think that the borough does have concrete opportunities to take a leadership role.
The borough assembly didn't consider any related legislation at its meeting Tuesday, but Assembly President Brent Johnson says he plans to talk to interim borough mayor Mike Navarre and other members of the assembly to figure out a follow-up. He says the borough should see if it can work with private energy companies to help them get renewables projects off the ground.
I don't foresee the borough, starting a wind farm or something. I think that we just want to make it easy for the folks who do want to start wind farms or who do want to, you know, create energy in some efficient manner that's going to be helpful for the 58,000 people that live in our borough.
The Kenai Peninsula Borough created a tax exemption earlier this year for private companies that want to create renewable projects on borough land. But Johnson notes businesses haven't taken advantage of other, more general borough tax exemptions in the past. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Read diverse, read indie. On Insight Daily Radio, conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. For many students and parents, navigating learning during and through COVID was an incredibly difficult and challenging task. Author Katie Novak, an internationally renowned education consultant and college graduate instructor with two decades of experience in teaching and administration, addresses these issues and more in the new and revised edition of her book, UDL Now. Universal Design for Learning, or UDL, is a framework to improve and optimize teaching and learning for all people based on scientific insights into how humans learn. UDL can provide practical insights and savvy strategies to help all learners succeed in a post-pandemic world using its principles. We spoke with her about this important and interesting book.
There are barriers to the adoption of UDL, and I often think of them as three legs of a stool. And when I think of the three legs that are required for a school or district to scale UDL, I think of mindset, skill set, and systems. And those are potentially the drivers of excellence and can also be the barriers. So this mindset piece is, do we believe in the power of inclusive practice? Do we believe that all students should be educated together, that they deserve access to general education that meets their needs? And then we also have to shift the mindset of kids themselves, that they are capable of working towards these goals. It's just they might have to do it in a very different way than everyone else.
That's author and educator Katie Novak on her book, UDL Now, which has just been released and is available wherever books are sold. Read Diverse, Read Indie is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Friday. It is the 14th day of October, the year 2022. The sun rose at 8:42 this morning. It will set again at 7:07. That will give us 10 hours and 24 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 53 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 58 degrees. That was set in 1926. And our record low is 20 degrees. That was set in 1927. Currently 48 degrees under overcast skies. They have east winds to 20 miles per hour at the airport right now, as well as 74% humidity and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is now calling for rain after 2 p.m. this afternoon. High near 48 today, with east winds gusting to 25. For tonight, they're still calling for heavy rain, as many as 1 or 2 inches possible overnight. Low around 42 overnight with east winds to 25, gusting to 35. Looking at our local tides, we have an incoming tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will be at 4:58, about 5 p.m. That will be an 8.9-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 11:48, almost midnight, of 5/10. Over on the west side, you will have a high tide at 5:25 this afternoon. That will be a 13.6-foot tide in Larson Bay, followed by a low tide after midnight at 12:13 a.m. of 6/10. Mariners, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Gale warning for tonight. East winds to 30 knots today, seas to 6 feet. Coming up to 35 knots tonight, seas building to 15 feet. For tomorrow, south 20, seas to 10 feet. Saturday, southeast 20, seas to 9 feet. Sunday through Monday, south 25, seas to 10 feet. And for Tuesday, they're saying north 30, seas to 23 feet. Over in the Chillicothe Strait, gale warning tonight and Saturday. East wind to 30 knots, seas to 9 feet. For tonight, northeast winds to 45 knots, seas to 15 feet. And for tomorrow, northeast 40, diminishing to 25 knots tomorrow afternoon. 13-foot seas should subside to 8 feet tomorrow afternoon. And for Saturday night, northeast 20, seas to 5 feet. Be sure and stop by the Kodiak Refuge Visitor Center today or tomorrow for the Nature and Wildlife Photography Exhibit. That's the Kodiak Refuge Visitor Center downtown. It's going on until 5 p.m. today and from 12 to 5 p.m. tomorrow. So go by and look at the nature and wildlife photos. Also happening tomorrow, the Kodiak Balalaika players will be playing at the Kodiak Public Library. That's happening between 2 and 3 p.m., so if you'd like an hour of ethnic folk music, show up at 2 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library tomorrow. The award-winning Kodiak Shakes Bears are proud to present their opening production of the season, She Kills Monsters, by Chin Wen. Set in 1995, the play follows Agnes as she plays a Dungeons & Dragons game left behind by her recently deceased younger sister. It's full of renegade characters, a demon queen, a dark elf, even a foul-mouthed fairy, as well as demonic cheerleaders and a giant eyeball monster. It's the perfect show to bring you into the Halloween spirit. Performances will take place at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium tonight, Saturday, and Sunday at 7 p.m., and there will also be matinee performances Saturday and Sunday at 2 p.m. Tickets are a mere $15 for adults and $5 for students. They are available at the door. Or you can call Jared Griffin at 907-942-1903. Friends of Wendy Beck and Harvey Goodell would like you to join them in celebrating their lives at the Buskin Beach House this next Wednesday, October 19th, from 3 to 7 p.m. Bring a favorite dish and some stories to share. Again, that's 3 to 7 p.m. at the Buskin Beach House next Wednesday. The Hospice and Palliative Care Workshop, Remembrance Altar Workshop, is happening tomorrow and Sunday. That's happening at Rooted Kodiak at 1817 Millbay Road. Sometimes the best way to move through your grief journey is through making something meaningful with your hands. Bring mementos, photos, small treasures, etc. from a past loved one, and with the guidance of artist Bonnie Dillard, you can create a beautiful tribute piece to hang on your wall. The Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak will provide the space and materials for people to create a meaningful piece of art that holds memories of a lost loved one. Again, that's going on both tomorrow and Sunday at Rooted Kodiak, 1817 Millbay Road. For more information, give them a call at 907-512-0600. The Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak is hosting their new volunteer training. That's happening Thursday, October 20th, from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. It's for all volunteers, and also Saturday, October 22nd, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. for direct care volunteers. Again, that's Thursday, October 20th, from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. for all volunteers, and Saturday, October 22nd, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. for direct care volunteers. For more information and to register, visit their website at hpck.org or call them at 907-512-0600.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the October 14th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Well, it finally happened. Termination dust has made its appearance, first in the Cope Mountain Range on Sunday and more widespread a couple of days later. Even Pillar Mountain had a dusting of snow. The phrase termination dust seems to have its origins right here in Alaska. Most references I've found say that the phrase was originally used among construction crews because the arrival of snow in the mountains typically signified the end of the construction season. Now the phrase is used by nearly every Alaskan. Termination dust in the mountains means that winter is very near. But we sure have had some gorgeous autumn days, incredible sunsets and sunrises recently as autumn lingers a little longer. And the flowers are still blooming in my garden, so we're not quite done with autumn yet. The silvers are lingering in some rivers and along shorelines, too. There's still some time to put away a little more fish for the year, so get out there and give it your best shot. While you're out and about, keep your eyes open for swans on the lakes and ponds around town and out the road. There were several swans on Mission Lake a couple of weeks ago, and one was on Cowson Pond on Thursday evening. Start off the theater season with the Kodiak Shakespeare's production of She Kills Monsters. The show is full of renegade characters, a giant eyeball monster, combat sequences, a heavy metal band, and more. Gen Xers will find many familiar things in the show, too. It's a great way to kick off the Halloween season. There are shows at 7 p.m. on Friday and Saturday and matinees at 2 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday on the main stage in the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium this weekend. Tickets are available at the door. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Are you planning to vote in the November 8th general election? If so, your voting location might have changed since you last voted. That's why it's important to make sure you have a voting plan before Election Day on November 8th. Can't make it? Request a by-mail ballot by October 29th or make a plan to vote early in person. Visit elections.alaska.gov to find your polling place and more. This message paid for by the Alaska State Division of Elections.